Now we turn to Kenosha, Wisconsin. Two protesters were killed and one injured last night in Kenosha, Wisconsin, in ongoing demonstrations against the police shooting of Jacob Blake in the back in front of his children. The shooter, who is part of a vigilante group, has now been arrested and charged with murder. Police bullets had gone through Jacob Blake's spinal cord and severed it, and Blake is now paralyzed from the waist down. The governor of Wisconsin has declared an emergency and called in hundreds of National Guard soldiers. We're joined from Houston by Dr. Gerald Horn. Dr. Horn is a professor of history at the University of Houston, the author of many, many books, including Blows Against the Empire, U.S. Imperialism in Crisis. His latest book is The Dawning of the Apocalypse. Dr. Gerald Horn, welcome back.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. We've had a nationwide revolt against racism that began, was triggered by the nonchalant killing of George Floyd. That movement has gone through different stages and phases, ebbs and flows. It included tens of millions of people, literally, who came into the streets, many for the first time. And yet, when you look at what's happened, even though the political climate shifted somewhat, at least in a symbolic way, the virus of police killing, the pandemic of police violence against especially Black people, frequently unarmed Black people like Jacob Blake, that goes on unabated. It's not a surprise that Kenosha is a place of uprising, even though Kenosha is not a place where you normally have protests.
Well, I think that when historians of the future look back at this fraught moment, inevitably they'll draw a connection with the Republican Party convention that's taking place as we speak. That is to say, it's not only the fact that the oaf in the Oval Office, Agent Orange himself, has set the tone for this kind of violence. Recall the escapades during his 2016 run for the presidency. But it's also at the Republican Party convention itself. Featured speakers were the McCloskeys from St. Louis, Missouri, who you recall quite infamously waved weapons at Black Lives Matter protesters who were simply marching past their house. Now, what's interesting about that particular story is that the McCloskeys, despite publicity to the contrary, actually live in the city of St. Louis. In fact, despite the fact that they have this palatial mansion in St. Louis, they're within walking distance of a relatively working class, middle class, poor Black community. And so this was perceived as particularly threatening, and the fact that they were honored guests at this Republican Party convention obviously sends a signal. But on the other side of the ledger, another signal is being sent. Recall that in the last 24 to 48 hours, you've had stories emerging from pro basketballers, including members of the Boston Celtics and Toronto Raptors, who have suggested that they may boycott upcoming playoff games because they feel that kneeling before games and wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts is just not doing it. And so they want to hit the 1% in their pocket. So let's stay tuned with regard to that. But overall, I think that listeners need to realize that we are in the throes of a counter-revolution, a counter-revolution against the anti-Jim Crow measures of the 1960s, a counter-revolution that could eventuate ultimately in an overthrow of the social reform measures of the 1930s, including Social Security, which Mr. Trump has threatened to wreck by reducing the payroll tax, and unemployment compensation, which, as you know, is now being held up in the Congress. A shorthand for what we're experiencing, other than counter-revolution, is that we may be on the path to a kind of unique U.S. fascism, which is represented by what you're seeing in the streets of Wisconsin, with so-called civilians taking up arms, purportedly in league with the police. My understanding is that the man who has been accused of perpetrating these killings, that protesters wanted him arrested, and in fact, my understanding is he was willing to turn himself over to the police authorities, but in a sense was rebuffed. So I think that it's very important for folks to take this moment quite seriously and perhaps to dust off their marching shoes and get into the streets themselves.
Very important words. And I think it's important to have a long-term and historical perspective. At any given moment, you can feel, as many of us did, a great sense of optimism, even a degree of euphoria when tens of millions of people came into the streets to try to push back against police violence. But for a number of reasons, the Republicans have decided to make the caricaturing of that movement, the demonizing of it, the stereotyping it, the punching bag around which they're going to run. I'm going to play a very short 30-second audio clip from Donald Trump Jr., who's clearly being groomed to be the next generation of Trump politicians like the Bushes and Clintons, et cetera, and the earlier the Kennedys, these dynastic families. Trump is trying to do the same. Listen to what Donald Trump Jr. actually said at the RNC, again, coinciding with the armed attack last night, the shootings last night, the killings last night in Kenosha. Let's listen.
Is win. People of faith are under attack. You're not allowed to go to church, but mass chaos in the streets gets a pass. It's almost like this election is shaping up to be church, work, and school versus rioting, looting, and vandalism. Or, in the words of Biden and the Democrats, peaceful protesting. Anarchists have been flooding our streets, and Democrat mayors are ordering the police to stand down.
All right, Gerald Horn, we have 3 minutes left. That's Donald Trump Jr. Again, the false presentation about the Democratic mayors, many of them, you know, it was local police departments that did a lot of the brutality and violence and repression. But work, church, school versus the riotous anarchist communists who are taking over the country.
Well, I think this is reflective of the point that the white right embodied in today's GOP wants their 63 million strong base to see themselves as the victims, not as the perpetrators. To hear them tell it, they're subject to so-called political correctness. They're subject to so-called cancel culture. They're subject, believe it or not, to being roughhoused and manhandled in the streets. Recall when Mr. Trump was asked about the disproportionate number of blacks being killed by the police, he immediately raised the question of, quote, whites, unquote, being killed by the police. And I think it's important for folks on the left to realize that in some ways, Mr. Trump and his base are leveraging the protests and as well the discord and dissent coming from the elite press, such as the New York Times and the Washington Post, to their advantage. What I mean is that these folks in the Trump base want to see themselves as being ground down by this unlikely alliance between black folk and the elite, a sort of a throwback to the Republican Party post-U.S. Civil War. And I think that when Mr. Trump is attacked in editorials, his base sees that as the equivalent of a face tattoo. That is to say, when a person has a face tattoo, it's sort of a symbol, according to certain sociologists, that they're putting themselves beyond the confines of so-called police polite society. And when Mr. Trump is being attacked by Black Lives Matter protesters and being attacked in the New York Times editorial pages, that's seen as a sign of endorsement. Likewise, when Mr. Trump basically puts out the welcome mat for QAnon, this rather bizarre sect so far, which is sending members to Congress, I'm afraid to say, in January, he's opening the door to this growing gathering alliance, a consolidation of the right that is not only embroiled and enmeshed in the counter-revolution, but also is paving the way, once again, for a unique form of U.S. fascism.
Dr. Gerald Horn joined us from Houston. He is a professor of history at the University of Houston, the author of many, many books, including Blows Against the Empire, U.S. Imperialism in Crisis. His latest book, published, I believe, by Monthly Review, is The Dawning of the Apocalypse. Is that right, Gerald? Monthly Review?
Yep. Absolutely correct.
I got the book. I read the book. I shared it with my friends. I encourage our audience to get the book as well. You're listening to Loud and Clear after a short break. We'll be right back.
Loud and Clear. loud and clear.